Welcome to another edition of the Inside Scoop. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm your host and also the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. If you're not familiar with Inside Scoop, it's a podcast dedicated to helping parents learn about the soccer pathways that would be available to their child if they lived in another city around the world. And this show is brought to you by Anytime Soccer Training. Anytime Soccer Training is the only training program with well over 5,000 training videos that cover all the major individual skill areas. So check out anytime-soccer.com to learn more about the program. And now let's get on to the show. In this show, I'm going to answer a listener's question regarding aerial control and juggling. He reached out to me. He says he has a seven-year-old child. He's been listening to the podcast and asked for any tips around helping his child improve in juggling. And I shared a previous podcast I did. Maybe I'll summarize it really quickly, but I shared a previous podcast I did along with a few other tips. But then he had a follow-on question, which is going to be the subject of this podcast. And the question basically was, why do you start with thigh juggling instead of starting with your feet? And that's a very good question. So let's tee this up first, though, and put it into its broader context, right? And if he's asking me this question and he's just getting started with the program, I'm going to assume he hasn't listened to all of these podcasts. So I am a self-described parent trainer. I am the unofficial mayor of parent trainers. Parent trainers are parents who want to actively support their child, not willing to outsource 100% of their child's development to someone else and expect the child to reach their full potential, but they recognize they're standing in for the child until the child is old enough to stand in for themselves. And even when that is the case and the child does reach a degree of maturity, like my older son, I'm still there to help, but it's a lot more pull and a lot less push. Parent trainers believe in deliberate practice. They're not really going to entertain this debate. There's a lot of brain science, common sense, and experience around it. It's not the only thing you need to do, of course, but we have seen deliberate practice work in our lives and other people's lives, and we are big proponents of it. But we recognize the precarious situation that parents have, the relationship with a child. Familiarity breeds contempt. Many of us did not grow up playing soccer, and even if we did, our children don't want to listen to us. So we have to strike the right balance. And that's what we spend a lot of time talking about in this podcast. And so in that vein, I have said, well, one of the ways that I try to strike the right balance with my children, and there are a lot of things we do, but one of them is I narrow the scope to be very specific about where I think I can add the most value, right, as a parent. So a lot of the friction that I saw with parents, a lot of the friction I see with parents who work with their own kids, or even parents and those parents who do not work with their own kids, you can broadly say a lot of people have not self-reflected on how their behavior is impacting their children, and their children don't have the agency to tell dad, take a chill pill, you need to relax. Hey, mom, you're driving me crazy. Some kids don't have the agency to be able to do that, or just walk away and say, I'm not going to participate in this. So it takes a higher level of self reflection for us as parents to be cognizant of our own behavior and how that's going to impact our children. So you start there with, hey, am I doing the right thing? You know, what is my child's body language? Just the common sense stuff of reflecting on my own behavior. But then after that, I said, hey, okay, well, where can I get the most bang for my buck and preserve the mental side and the fun side and the of my child's overall experience? And as a parent, I concluded, and I won't give the exhaustive list, but I said, hey, this is where I am best suited to help my child as it relates to helping them reach their full potential in soccer. So, hey, we want to make sure that they help them get maximum amount of touches in the shortest amount of time. And again, I'm not going to give a lot of context here because we've talked about this a lot. So we want to help them get maximum amount of touches in the shortest amount of time, right? We want to help them develop their non-dominant foot. It's safe to say that you are the only person in the world, even your spouse or their the other parent probably doesn't care about this as much as you. I can confidently say that for better or worse, I don't want to throw our coaches under the bus, but they just have too much going on to care about this more than you. And your child does not care about this more than you. You are the only person that is can focus on helping them develop a non-dominant foot in the way that you can do this. And it's the greatest athletic, other than genes. It's up between genes, the DNA that you pass on, and maybe the mentality. Being able to use your non-dominant foot is really high up there, right? So that's another area that I tend to focus on. And then I tend to focus on how do we frame this stuff? How do we frame these sports so that they have a mindset to be competitive, but also have the confidence to walk away and decide to do something else and not to worry about me. So how do we frame this? How do we frame losses? Do we get too low when we lose, too high when we win? Are we able to understand and distill things down into the key drivers? What's really important is that tournament as important to your development as what we do in the backyard. These are the types of conversations we try to have. And then finding a club that suits your child's personality and their values. I've often said I have two children in two different clubs. Each club fits their personality and works for them. And I was only one that was going to be able to make that decision on their behalf and then observe them and listen to them to see if we needed to pivot somewhere else. And finally, and the purpose of this podcast is you can help them become masterful in the air. Right. So for better or worse, the soccer community has relegated aerial control to something that should be done at home, irrespective of the skill level of the kids that they inherit. So they've just said, hey, this is not something that we're going to spend, we recommend spending pretty much any time in team training on. And, as a parent trainer, I often say we are navigators. We're not too interested in trying to change and manipulate what folks do. As long as they do whatever they do well, we're kind of good with that. And we'll just fill in the gaps. We will navigate around them and try to fill in the gaps. So, again, I have an older son, and their philosophy is very much possession. One touch, get the ball off your feet. We're going to play in space. We're going to play the channels. We're playing wide. We believe that the ball and the mind should move faster than the body. That's kind of how their club is. We want to keep the ball. That's how they want to play. And so I supplement all that other stuff that you don't have time to do if that's the way you want to play. All that individual, that creativity, the attacking in the final third, that finishing. My sons and I, we do that in the backyard. On the flip side, I have another son, and it's very much more direct, and they don't mind you dribbling 10 times and losing a ball 10 times. It just doesn't seem to be a top priority at the moment. They'll take those times that you connect. They'll celebrate those times as a team that connects passes, but it doesn't seem to be the point of emphasis. So I coach my son in other leagues, and I work with him on those areas. And that's a little bit harder because I have to kind of get kids together. That's a little bit harder, but I work with him on that aspect of the game. And as a matter of fact, slowly but surely, they're moving him to the number six, which is the same position my older son plays. I happen to think that part of it is because I have emphasized with my younger son to play simple and don't lose possession, which is sacrilegious in our coaching communities, at least what I read, because they say, hey, you're seven, you're eight, you're nine, you're 10, you should just be able to lose the ball indiscriminately. Basically, it's okay because you're being brave and courageous. And I've always added a degree of nuance to say that's true, with the caveat that we always have to understand where we at, and we have to play within this overarching principle that the ball and the mind should move faster than the body. And so you're going to take chances when they make sense. But there really isn't an age where I don't want you to, maybe when you're really, really young, I'm getting five or six, where I don't want you to start evaluating risk reward, right? And so that's that. All right. So now that I've teed it up there, let's go on and talk about anytime soccer training and then how juggling
fits into that. So anytime soccer training is just a tool, right? It's no different than a hammer. I got to get a new, I'm thinking about this. I got to get another one of those, not pressure cookers, but the name escapes me. Instant pots. It's just because ours just went out and I love that thing. It's just like an instant pot. It's just a tool, right? And just like an instant pot, people have been cooking for thousands and thousands of years before instant pot came around. It's just something that makes it a little bit easier for everyone and people use it. Okay. It's just a tool. And this tool, however, reflects a process that I believe works well when you're training kids, especially when you're training kids, training your own kids at home. And that process, again, is designed to say, hey, we're going to get maximum touches in the shortest amount of time by following a slow progression that's so slow that the child learns in these small bite-sized chunks without becoming overwhelmed. And it moves so slow that they barely realize that they're improving. And the trade-off is no particular session in any particular time will be, you may sacrifice some of the I guess you'd say benefits of being spontaneous, but it's well, in my opinion, compensated for the fact that you're getting all these touches, you're not stressing the child out, and you're able to be consistent without them becoming overwhelmed. And you're reducing the execution risk. So what happens is a lot of times we'll have conversations and people will compare perfection to what you're doing. And in between perfection, like what you're talking about in theory, in between what you're talking about in theory and what you're actually doing is what we call execution. So in theory, I can describe a situation where I watch my sons play a game and I see they have this particular weakness. And then I come in and I'm able to talk to them about this weakness and design a training session that works on this weakness, and we're able to, and then I'm able to execute that training session in order to get the outcomes that I want, and everybody's happy. That's in theory. But when it comes to execution, we've talked about oftentimes the parents' evaluation of their children is wrong because evaluating any athlete is wrong. And then you got to overlay that with the stages of development that that child happens to be in. And then you got to overlay that with who the child is playing with at the time and then their maturity and then what the club is asking them to do. So more than likely, what you're seeing is in your assessment of what you see in these particular games is wrong. And then so now whatever this session you're trying to design is probably working on, wrong is too strong of a word, but working on a point of emphasis that may not be a weakness or something that they're just going to grow out of. And then you're assuming you're not going to frustrate your child and all that kind of stuff. So I say all that to say this process says, hey, we're going to be pretty agnostic about what happens in these games for the most part. We're going to be pretty agnostic about that. And we basically believe that all children need to work roughly on the same things in the backyard. And they roughly all need to start at the same place. And I'll do a separate podcast on this. And what separates the various skill levels is what we call a triple V, what I call a triple V, which is the volume. So how much they're doing, the variety, you know, how what so volume is how long they can train. The variety is how many different skill areas they can do in a session. And then the variation is how many different variations within a skill area. So ball mastery may have 13 different programs. Juggling has about another 6 to 10 programs. So my sons will do a lot of different ball mastery programs, which is going to give them a variation. And then they're like 10 different modules, skill sets, skill areas, and they may do those. So, and then they're going to train for hour and a half. So that's the triple V, and that's what we're going for. But they don't necessarily, quote unquote, skip and try to find this very specific thing. Having said that, we are building into the technology, should come out in a couple of weeks, where you can make your own workouts even more specific by selecting videos. And then I'm also, we, and it will be open source, so we'll also be able to pin specific videos and create workouts for you guys. All right, so just wanted to tee it up, give a little bit of background for our new listeners. And now let's just go to the question. So the question was, hey, why do you start the program with them juggling with the thigh instead of them juggling with the foot? And I'm just going to rattle off a few of the reasons. Number one, the thigh is a larger surface area. And so it tends to be easier for kids who are beginning to learn how to juggle to accomplish. That in turn helps them build a degree of confidence, which is important as they go down this road of learning how to juggle. It also, and again, I want to be very clear, it's a nuance point. It also helps reduce the frustration between the child and the parent. I know there's some chemical stuff going on. I know there's some biological stuff going on. But when your child is practicing juggling, for example, and you're trying to help them and they lose the ball every 2 seconds, there's a little bit of frustration that creeps in that you have to control. So if they're beginners, starting off with the thigh is going to allow them to accomplish this 5-minute task, right? This 5-minute video, without making so many mistakes, right? And even when they first start, they'll still make mistakes. The next thing is most kids lack a high degree of balance and coordination. This is just a natural thing, right? Chewing gum and walking at the same time is something that most kids lack. So when they're doing the thigh juggling, it's important that they move their feet at the same time in a rhythmic manner. Now, on podcast world, it's kind of hard to describe, but just think about it like any of your athletic anything that you've done athletically, where you're just moving your feet in place, but very small movement instead of just standing flat-footed and waiting. So kids don't typically understand that. So if you ask them to thigh juggle without giving them any instruction, they would just stand flat-footed and bounce the ball off their thigh. And you will notice they will be able to accomplish that relatively easily. But once you add the movement to it, right? One, two, three, bounce. One, two, three, bounce. One, two, three, bounce. Once you add the movement, you'll see that some of them, especially at those younger ages, will struggle. The next thing to remember is they have to, the way I describe it to kids when they're thigh juggling is they are kicking the ball with their thigh, which brings me to another point. Controlling the ball from the air with any part of their body is a relatively new experience for most kids and something that some kids shy away from. So thigh juggling is just a precursor to being able to deal with the ball with any part of their bodies. And you're just starting with the thigh. But it's an active, engaging exercise. So you're not just letting them toss the ball and it hit the bottom of their, I mean, hit their thigh and it only goes like 2 inches from the thigh. But you're not tossing the ball too high in the air either. You're tossing the ball slightly and letting it drop down. But when it touches the thigh, the way I describe it to the kids, the trajectory, hope I'm saying that right, of the ball should dramatically change. So in other words, it should dramatically go up with a degree of force, but not so high over the heads, but slightly over the heads, because they're gearing up when they if they start the program, the first drill is just thigh juggling. Thigh catch, sorry, with just their right thigh, but they're gearing up to be able to juggle with their thigh. The next thing is you have a degree of desensitization. And so what that basically means is it so kids, when kids first start thigh juggling, oftentimes they don't like the sensation on their thighs. They'll feel like maybe it hurts a little bit or stings a little bit. And their thigh muscles and the skin, they're not technically getting they're not getting tougher. It's just that the kid is becoming desensitized to the sensation of the ball hitting their thigh. And that has some degree of importance, again, as we build into the total footballer. So another thing too is it's a good warm up, right? So you because you're moving in place and you're bouncing the ball off your thigh, which is a slightly different, I guess you'd say movements. It's slightly different movements than just juggling with your foot, and it actually increases the heart rate. I'm not going to say it's typically not as much. It's not a cardio situation. You're not getting the heart rate up that much, but it does. It is a decent warm up. And then let's see. Also, as the program goes on, you have traveling with the ball, right? And if you think it's hard for the kid to juggle with their foot and kick and catch with their foot stationary, traveling with the ball is even harder. So when you start traveling with the ball with thigh juggling, again, it's a larger surface area, but it allows them to travel with the ball and execute the drill that's in the video. And I'll take an aside to say, and then again, we're getting into the weeds of the program. When we film the traveling with the ball, we had him kind of like he is traveling, and you'll see that, but he's not going that far. But when I'm training kids or working with my own sons, and we're outside on the field or something, they will travel with the ball almost half the field, right? So we see what we need to do in the video, and then they'll travel with the ball half the field. Try to make sure I don't miss anything. You do get a little bit of a quad workout as well. And if they are really extending their legs, there's a little bit of that as well. Trying my best to be as comprehensive as I can. So let me conclude with a couple more final thoughts. So, not trying to be critical on our lovely coaches and stuff, because they tend to do a great job. And oh, by the way, just like the analogy I use with the cooking utensil, what kind of name escapes me? Now, I always want to say pressure cooker, but it's Instant Pot. People have been juggling and become masterful on the ball without following any type of process. So this is by no means anything that is even remote. I can't even say how unnecessary it is, with a straight face, because it's so unnecessary. This is a process that has worked for me and my sons. It's a process that I think is more efficient than sort of a laissez-faire approach, but at the same time, you get to where you're going to get to, and you can make your own decision. But I say that to say, in our team practices, when they do have the kids juggling, I felt like it wasn't as intentional enough, and I felt like you could do the same thing, use the same 2 minutes or the same 5 minutes, and be very intentional about the touches. You could be intentional about which part of the foot you're using. You could be intentional about inside of the foot, the outside of the foot, the left foot, the right foot, the laces, how high you want it to go. You could be very intentional about how many mistakes you allow them to have. And what I mean by that is if you, and we're going to talk about that, if you make a mistake here, what that means and kind of stuff. You can be very intentional about are they using both feet? And you can also be very intentional about are they compensating for the inability to do what you're asking them to do. So what that will look like is a kid when they first start juggling, or any kid actually, for that matter, maybe they have a difficult time juggling with their laces. So they'll use the inside of their foot a couple of times and then their laces and then off the thigh. And that's fine. And again, they're going to become good if they're consistent. But from a technical perspective, you may want to insist that they use their laces this time, and they should be have command over the ball to be able to do that with relative ease. And I felt like this sort of scrutiny is not emphasized enough in team environments it's just looked at as, okay, we're going to juggle, and wherever the ball goes, and it is what it is, right? And I think you as a parent, because you're going to be working one-on-one, one-on-two with your children, on-two with your children, you can add a degree of discipline there that you're not going to get in most team environments. The second thing, and I said this in the previous podcast, is I like to create a perimeter, a box of four cones when my children are doing juggling. And even my older one, we still do it today. Because I feel as if you need to be able to control the ball in a tight space if that's the objective. Also, when you're working with younger kids, consequence is too strong a word, but you do want there to be a demonstrative signal when they lose control of the ball, right? And as a parent, you want to create tools that allow the tool to do the talking as opposed to you. So when my sons were really young and they had difficult time controlling the ball, I would make a square based on their ability. So it might be 20 by 20 at first, and then 10 by 10 and 5 by 5. And in the program, we have 1 by 1 squares. And if the ball went out of the square, maybe they have to add 10 more juggles, that kind of thing. And in that podcast I did earlier, which I shared with you, I effectively explained, and this was before I created Anytime Soccer Training, by the way, that I wanted their average juggling to improve. And I felt the best way to improve the average was to give them stretch goals, right? And then also break it down where they're doing stuff that's a little bit easier. But again, when doing stretch goals and implementing stretch goals with your own kids, there's a tendency that for them to become frustrated or you to become frustrated because your incentives may not be aligned. Well, what does that mean? Well, you don't have the other kids that are competing against, and your dad, your mom. So a stretch, you don't know if they're putting forth maximum effort. And there are only so many gifts and trinkets you can give. Eventually, if you're on this ground every day, that stuff wears out. And so what I did is what I call positive constraints. It's not a game, even though it has a gaming component to it. It's just a way to manage, it's just a way to align our incentives. And it works something like this. You create a small perimeter, you always have that perimeter, right? And then you'll say something to the effect of, all right, here's how it works. You have 10, 5 attempts to get 100 juggles, and they'll go off, and they count their attempts and you count the juggles. And every time the ball drops, that's one of their attempts, right? Now, if they don't get to 100, then the next time you add 5 more. So now you have 10 attempts. That gets your average to 10 to get to 100. They want to complete it, so they're going to try their best to get to 100. All you care about is if they can't do that, they juggle more. No fighting, no arguing. If the ball goes out of the box, they lose an attempt. Again, you don't want to be chasing the ball all over the yard, and you don't want them booting the ball halfway across the yard just to get one more juggle. But at the same time, you don't want to keep talking to them about it. Just let the game do the talking. Ball goes out of the box, they lose an attempt. You'll immediately notice that they'll start self-correcting. And slowly their average will increase, increase, increase. Once the average increases, then you go to another higher number and same amount of attempts. Maybe it's 200, you start with 5. Now, you're not trying to make the game so difficult that it defeats them, right? You're just trying to add a different degree of stretch goals. So I used to do that as well. The way I do it now with Anytime Soccer Training is I might do something like that, but I'll play one of the 2-minute warm-up videos. I don't have to do this so much with my kids now because they've gotten older, but I might play one of the 2-minute videos. And I'll say, hey, you got to juggle these 2 minutes. The video is playing. If you make 5 mistakes, we have to repeat the video, that kind of thing. Other than that, and then I will add this, and let's just say that they got smart and they got wise. You put the 2-minute video on, and they said, and I knew, and they know that they have to if they don't make five mistakes, they don't have to do it again. Well, there'll be a temptation when they make a mistake and the ball drops to take their time before they start juggling again. But because you're a whole adult and you're smart and you're creating the game, you can create any rules that reduce the friction but get the behavior that you want. So in this case, I would just simply say, well, that's fine, but you need to get, and I'm going to make this number up. You would have counted how many juggles they can kind of do. You'll know roughly, and I'm going to make this number up. You got to get a minimum of 300 juggles before the timer goes off. So that makes them speed up, right, and go faster because that's what you want. And also try not to make the mistakes, and that's all you care about. And if they have to do a two-minute video again, that's fine. They know how long it is, and everyone's doing the best they can, and you're done. That's the kind of framework I use to communicate with my kids. And in conclusion, I don't obsess over what level I think they're at. My older son and my younger son plow through the videos and they follow them in order. And all I do differently is I add more variation and add more volume. So in the juggling program, there's partner juggling, there is volleying, there's bouncing it off the wall, there's tennis ball, there's size one balls, there's challenges, and we're going to be adding more and more. So they're going to follow the videos in order. I'm not obsessed over what level I think they're at. They just crank through the 5-minute videos in order, but I'll add additional stuff. I hope that was helpful. Definitely ping me if you have any more questions. I threw a lot at you, but I know you haven't been listening to all of these podcasts. So I just wanted to give you a quick summary. I know it went longer than I expected, but thanks for listening, guys. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. Let's get better together.